ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 11, text number 31. Is it written on the board?
No.
No? Okay, so everyone can hear very carefully and repeat. Samyaksha
Samyaksha
Rosham
Bhadram
Te Patipam Shreyasam Param Shrutena Bhuyasa Rajan Agadena Yata Atmayam Sangyat Sharosham Badrante
Sayat Sarosham Badrante
Pratipam Shreyasam Param
Pratipam Shreyasam Param
Shrutena Bhuyasa Rajan
Shrutena Bhuyasa Rajan
Agadena Yathamayam
Agadena Yathamayam
Sangyaccha Rosham Bhadram Te
Sangyaccha Rosham Bhadram Te
Pratipam Shreyasam Param Pratipam Shreyasam Param Shrutena Bhuyasa Rajan
Shrutena Bhuyasa Rajan
Agatena Yathamayam
Agatena Yathamayam
So every day someone should make sure to write the verse on the board. So it's easier to remember. Samyaccha.
Samyaccha.
Just control.
Just control.
Rosham.
Rosham.
Anger.
Anger.
Bhadram.
Bhadram.
All good fortune.
All good fortune.
Te.
To you.
Pratipam.
Pratipam.
Enemy.
Shreyasam.
Of all goodness. Param,
the foremost,
Shrutena,
by hearing,
Bhuyasa,
constantly,
Rajan, my dear king,
Agadena,
by medicinal treatment,
Yata,
as
Atmayam,
disease. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear King, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instructions. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj was a liberated soul, and actually he was not angry with anyone. But because he was the ruler, it was his duty to become angry for some time in order to keep law and order in the state. His brother Uttama was without fault, yet he was killed by one of the yakshas. It was the duty of Dhruva Maharaj to kill the offender, life for life, because Dhruva was the king. When the challenge came, Dhruva Maharaj fought vehemently and punished the yakshas sufficiently. But anger is such that if one increases it, it increases unlimitedly. In order that Dhruva Maharaj's kingly anger not exceed the limit, Manu was kind enough to check his grandson. Dhruva Maharaj could understand the purpose of his grandfather, and he immediately stopped the fighting. The word Shrutena Bhuyasa, by constantly hearing, are important in this verse. By constantly hearing about devotional service, One can check the force of anger, which is detrimental to the progress of devotional service. Srila Parikshit Maharaj said that the constant hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is the panacea for all material diseases. Everyone, therefore, should hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. By hearing, one could always remain in equilibrium, and thus his progress in spiritual life will not be hampered. Dhruva Maharaja's becoming angry with the miscreants was quite appropriate. There's a short story in this connection about a snake who became a devotee upon instruction by Narada. Pretty good preaching, huh? If you can make a snake into a devotee. So Narada was very powerful. If we try to imitate it, we'll probably get bit. But he was able to make a snake into a devotee, who instructed him not to bite anymore. Since ordinarily a snake's business is to fatally bite other living entities, as a devotee he was forbidden to do so. Unfortunately, people took advantage of this non-violence on the part of the snake, especially the children, who began to throw stones at him. He did not bite anyone, however, because it was the instructions of his spiritual master. Wake up, wake up. After a while, when the snake met his spiritual master, Narada, he complained, "I have given up the bad habit of biting innocent living entities, but they are mistreating me by throwing stones at me." Upon hearing this, Narada Muni instructed him, "Don't bite, but do not forget to expand your hood as if you were going to bite. Then they will go away." Similarly, a devotee is always nonviolent. He is qualified with all good characteristics, but in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, he should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. So a devotee is actually always very saintly in his mood, her mood. The devotee is always in a very saintly mood, but sometimes because we are dealing with cheaters in this material world, we have to show our hoods. Even we have to show some, make a show of some anger, even though a devotee is actually never angry. Although sometimes one, a devotee may get carried away and lose his temper, actually lose control, and one has to be checked, as Dhruva Maharaj was checked by Manu. So we have to be very careful to control this anger, because it is the it degrades the consciousness. And the very nice instruction is given here, how to conquer over anger, how to remain in equilibrium. And that is very simple. You simply constantly hear about Krishna. Because what is the cause of anger? Anger is when you have a desire for something and you don't get it fulfilled. You want something and you don't get it. And you become angry. Ah, I didn't get it. Somebody else got it, or I didn't get it, you see. Become angry. But if you're always hearing about Krishna, then what is the result? Atmaram. You become totally satisfied just in my hearing about it. It's called Atmaram, one who is self-satisfied. The Atmaram person doesn't need anything external to be happy. They don't need money, they don't need sex life, they don't need fame, they don't need name. All they need is Krishna consciousness, and that alone totally and completely satisfies them. You see? So if you're in that state of consciousness, there's nothing to get angry about, because you have no desires that will go unfulfilled. You're simply hearing about Krishna. That in itself totally satisfies all the desires. You see? You don't need anything else except to hear about Krishna 24 hours. That's all you need. That is called Brahma-Bhuta stage. You see, that is called self-realization. When you're just totally happy, wow, I get to hear about Krishna. You mean I can chant Hare Krishna, I can remember Krishna 24 hours a day? This is wonderful. All I have to do is think about Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, remember Krishna, talk about Krishna, serve Krishna. You see, how you could ever become angry? Not possible. Because Krishna consciousness can never be taken away from you. If you are attached to Krishna, it's not that, well, you know, just like in the material world, there's some object, you know, you want to enjoy it, you want to have a relationship with it, but you have to share it with someone else. There's only so much money here in Amsterdam, you see. Only so much money here in the material world, and, you know, not everybody can have as much as they want, because there's a limited supply. But Krishna is unlimited, you see. You can have unlimited Krishna, and I can also have unlimited Krishna. Not that if I have a lot of Krishna, that you have to have less Krishna. No. Krishna is unlimited. This we saw what is that city? That capital, that Dwarka city, 5,000 years ago. Krishna proved that he is unlimited. He had 16,108 queens. Now, that's a pretty tall number. I mean, if I think of even marrying one woman, I could think it over 100 times. It's a big responsibility. But can you imagine 16,108 queens? That's called unlimited. And that's just, Krishna could have 16 trillion if he wanted, but he's just showing a pastime. So, he would go to the, he would sit as the king in one central location every day, and then after going home in the evening, I don't know what the hours were, 9 to 5, I don't know. But in the evening, after going back from his sitting there as king to do his royal duties, he would go home in the evening and he would divide himself into 16,108 Krishnas. And he would go to each palace of each queen. So each queen is so much, and he would do that every night, but every queen is thinking that I only am getting Krishna. Those other queens must be really, really frustrated. Because every night Krishna is coming to my palace, you see? So that is called unlimited. Krishna was able to totally and fully satisfy each and every one of those 16,108 queens as if she was the only queen. And Krishna does a similar thing for those devotees who preach. This is a preaching movement. So anyone who takes this movement very seriously and does any particular service in this movement qualifies as a preacher. I don't care if you're washing the pots. I don't care if you're sewing the deity outfits. I don't care if you're distributing books. I don't care if you're initiating disciples. Whatever your service may be in this movement, because it is a preaching movement, everyone is pushing for the preaching by doing their duty within the movement, you see. So when Krishna says there's no one more dear to me than the preacher, he's talking about everybody in this movement, you see, not just someone who's sitting there and talking into the microphone, you see, at the moment. Everyone is equally dear to Krishna who's in this mood, the Sankirtan movement of wanting to spread the rays of the benediction moon to the suffering souls of this universe. So Krishna says about the preacher, there is no one more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be anyone more dear. So is there some message for me? No? Okay. So can you imagine that Krishna treats that person who is taking up this spirit of spreading Krishna consciousness, the person that Krishna treats that person, that devotee, as if he is the most dear of all of his devotees. You may say, well, how is this possible? There's so many devotees in ISKCON who are taking up this preaching mood, so how they can all be treated like they're the number one devotee of Krishna? But Krishna has proven it in Dwarka. He can treat each and every single devotee as if they are the most important devotee. There is no devotee in the universe who is more dear than that particular devotee. So that is how Krishna is unlimited. He is absolutely unlimited, you see. In this material world, if someone has, you know, a family, they have, you know, there's one of the children who's the favorite child. So that child gets more attention and the other children get less attention. But Krishna is not that kind of father. He can give unlimited attention to each and every one of his dear children who take up this mood of preaching. So the whole point is, remember, what we're talking about, well, let's not get off the track in our understanding. We are talking about conquering over anger. That's what we're talking about today. So the key to do that is you have to become very dear to Krishna. Krishna Priya. By being in this mood of wanting to be Krishna conscious and share it with as many people as possible. If we are in this spirit, in this attitude, in this consciousness, then we'll be tasting so much nectar, because such a person is the most dear of all of Krishna's devotees. Can you imagine if you're the most dear of all of Krishna's devotees, how much nectar you will taste, how much mercy you will get, how much you'll be swimming in an ocean of bliss, like a fish in total bliss, swimming around that ocean of nectar, you see? So if you're tasting that much nectar, if you're relishing that much bliss, then what could ever bother you? You see? Anything of this material world is just a cheap trinket compared to this valuable jewel of Krishna consciousness. There's nothing like Krishna consciousness. In this material world, they take sex pleasure to be the number one thing. Yan maitanadi grihamedi sukham itu cham. That there's nothing more wonderful than that sex. Give me sex, give me sex, give me sex. You see, that's everyone's meditating. Give me, sex, 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 sex. But they are in the state of ignorance. You see? It's like somebody saying, give me stool, 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 give me stool. But we have a wonderful alternative. We have nice Krishna Prasadam. Gulab Jamun, Rasagula, Pakora, Samosa, you see, so many varieties of nice rice, and puri, chapati, chutney, sweet rice, you see, so many nice things. So who would want a plate of stool? If you have such a wonderful Krishna Prasadam, you see, if I give you, here's a plate of stool, here's your nice Janmastami, Gaurapurnima Prasad, the most opulent, wonderful Prasadam, will you take the plate of stool? Of course not. So this sex pleasure is simply stool. It is simply for the hog class of men, you see. The hogs in Vrindavan, we see, they're very much fun. You've been to Vrindavan. You've seen the stool eating hogs. They have the open sewers on the side of the road there. And the people pass stool and urine in their house. It comes out into the little sewer on the side of the road, and the hog starts wagging his tail. He goes running, whoopee. Time, wow, more fresh stool. He eats it up, and then after his belly is filled up with stool, he lies down in the stool and urine water and takes a nap. Ah, this is the life. So, if you want to be in the low-class mentality of the hog, then there's some very nice places where you can live, like Amsterdam. But if you want to have compassion on those poor souls, who even though they have a human birth, they have descended to the level of hog, then there's a very nice place you can live. Amsterdam. Because there's very wonderful opportunity here to save such poor souls who are actually the servants of Krishna. They're the children of Krishna. There's a great opportunity how to become Krishna Priya, and that is called the city of Amsterdam. Because, just imagine, if you have a good friend and he has lost his child. Sometimes it happens, you know, the child becomes lost and everyone goes looking for the missing child. And you are the person that finds that child and brings that child back to the parent. Just imagine how much happiness, how much joy, how much mercy you will get from that parent, you see, that you have found their missing child. So Amsterdam is a wonderful opportunity because there's so many lost children here. So many, many. What is the population?
More than 1 million.
Four?
Over a million.
Way over a million, yes. Over a million people. So many, over a million lost children of Krishna wandering around eating stool. And eating stool in the restaurants, eating stool everywhere, you see. Passing stool and eating stool. That's their life. But these are children of Krishna. They are meant to serve Him with love, to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. To bow down before the Lord, to serve the Vaishnavas, to worship the deities, all these over a million population, they are all meant to be ringing the bell for the Arti in their homes. Every morning at 4 o'clock, ringing the bell. 4:30 a.m., ringing the bell. In every home, the bell should be ringing at 4:30. Ding, 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 ding. Or they come here. You see, or ringing in home. Ding, 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 ding. See, that is what everyone is meant to be doing in the city of Amsterdam. So you are the lucky persons who have been given the special, special opportunity to be right here in the middle of all this nescience and bring light to these people. Tamasi ma jyotirgama. The Vedic wisdom says, do not remain in the darkness, come to the light. So you are the persons who are bringing the light. You're giving the books, you're giving the holy names, you're giving prasadam, you're giving yourselves to these people, your kindness, your love, your mercy, you're giving to these people. So by doing this, you become very, 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 very dear to Krishna. And especially you become very, 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 very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he is in great anxiety that these people are suffering. These are his children. They are suffering and it's causing him great torment in the heart. So if you can take this anxiety upon yourself, if you can take the torment, the anxiety upon your own mind to save these people, then Lord Chaitanya will be very pleased. This is of all the rare, those rare times when I got direct instructions from Prabhupada. This is one of, I think the time I pleased Prabhupada the very most was I told Prabhupada that the people in the city of Austin were desperately in need of Krishna consciousness. So I wanted to stay there to give them because they were desperately in need of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was so pleased that I felt that way, that these people are really in bad shape. They're desperately needing Krishna consciousness. Shishi Garnitai ki jai, Shishi Radhadamadar ki jai. So this is the way we can get the special mercy of Prabhupada, the special mercy of Krishna, and that is to feel compassion upon the suffering souls, not just to think about my sense gratification, subtle and gross. I can guarantee you, if we will simply focus on how we can give Krishna to others, then all of our personal needs will be met. We don't have to meditate on I, me, and mine 24 hours a day. If we think about what is pleasing to Krishna, if we make that the focus, we make that the center, then our own needs will automatically be filled. That's my practical experience. The more we can put Krishna in the center, the more everything comes automatically and naturally without any big, big endeavor. It's amazing how it works. As long as we're self-centered, we just struggle, 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 struggle for like anything, just to get a place to sleep and some food to eat. When we sincerely put Krishna in the center with every thought, with every word, and with every deed, then magic happens. Magic happens. Somehow or other, the material things just fall into place and we can just focus on the most wonderful, serene activity of remembering Krishna, reading about Krishna, talking about Krishna, giving Krishna to those people who need him. And who needs him the very most? That's us. Prabhupada said there's nothing more important than saving the world, but even more important is you must save yourself, you see. In English language, there's that saying, charity begins at home. You want to be charitable? You want to be merciful? Okay, start with yourself first. First of all, you become Krishna conscious. You become fixed in Krishna bhakti. Regulate your thoughts, your words, and your deeds so that 24 hours a day they are pleasing to Krishna. They are pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. They are pleasing to your Diksha Guru. They are pleasing to Siksha Gurus. They are pleasing to the Vaishnava community, you see. Learn how to enter into the spiritual family that Prabhupada has created, this ISKCON spiritual family. Learn how to be a loving, reciprocal family member in this family, of the worldwide family of devotees. That will give great strength. So we have to, if we have this taste, if we're getting this nectar, then anger will be the last thing on our minds. Someone can try to agitate us, and it'll just roll off like a drop of water rolling off a lotus leaf. If you're happy, if you're truly self-satisfied by Krishna consciousness, nobody can agitate you. And you may make a show of anger out of compassion to help that person, that's all. But you will never be overwhelmed by anger if you're fixed in Krishna consciousness. Somebody can be just, you know, the most, they can be so rude to you, so cruel to you, so inconsiderate. They can cheat you, they can do so many things, and it won't affect you. That's Krishna consciousness, you see. It's equilibrium. Brahma-bhuta prasanatmana sochati na kankshati samaksraveshu bhuteshu madmatim labhate param. You see. You have equal feelings towards everyone. Whether someone is your friend or your enemy, you have an equal feeling of compassion for both of them. Now, you may deal with them differently. But within your heart, you have an equal feeling both for your friend and for your enemy. That is called self-realization. These are symptoms of someone who is becoming fixed in Krishna consciousness. So we don't really have to worry about it, right? Because we're already fixed up in Krishna consciousness. We never get angry, right? We never get sexually agitated or disturbed, overwhelmed by our sense, right? We're already self-realized. We can just not worry about all this sadhana bhakti stuff. Because we're raganuga, just spontaneously thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, right? We have any raganuga bhaktas here today? We're spontaneously absorbed in thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, never think, had no material thoughts ever touched their brains. Well, no hands went up, so I guess we're all sadhakas, sadhana bhaktas, executing the rules and regulations of devotional service. But you know what? Even on this platform of sadhana bhakti, there's unlimited nectar. There's absolutely unlimited nectar. All we have to do is embrace the struggle. You see? All we have to do is embrace the struggle. When the going gets tough, that's right, the tough get going. So we have to be tough. We have to be transcendental Marines. The Marine Corps in the U.S., that's supposed to be the really tough fighters. When it's really tough, you bring in the Marine Corps. Or the red or the green berets, you see. We have to be tough fighters. Very tough fighters. That Maya can't mess around with us anymore, you see. Maya Devi can't mess with us. We're staunchly fixed in Krishna consciousness. Nothing will deter our minds from the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, you see. That fixity, this is nishta, to be fixed up devotee, solidly fixed. There's no deviation, you see. We can stay fixed 24 hours. So, how do we get there? That's the question. Well, now I'm not very fixed up. You know, I'm looping the loop around the Milky Way, and, you know, back around the sun planet, you know, chanting my japa, but my mind's going everywhere. So how do I become fixed in Krishna consciousness? How do I actually become staunchly fixed in the process of Krishna bhakti? Well, there's many different formulas. There's many different techniques and tricks you can use to conquer over that rascal called the mind. I mean, Bhakti Siddhanta has given us a very nice standard instruction, which I highly recommend for everyone, by the way. It's a very effective technique. You keep one pair of shoes, it's allegorical. You keep a pair of shoes by your bed, and you get up in the morning, you beat your mind with shoes 100 times. And before you take rest at night, you keep one broomstick handy also, and you beat your mind 100 times. Now, I'm not saying literally, okay? I'm saying that this means you have to curb down, you have to basically curb your mind down, let your mind know that it's a rascal and you don't want to listen to it anymore. The mind's position is accept and reject. Something seems favorable, so I'll accept it. Something seems unfavorable, I reject it. This is called the mind. But these things are all simply creations. They are fabrications. This thing is nice, I accept it. It gives me happiness. this thing is not nice, I reject it because it gives me unhappiness. These are fabrications of the mind. We have to come to the transcendental platform of taking the instructions of Krishna, coming through the medium of the bona fide spiritual master. We have to take these instructions because they are not in the mental platform. They are transcendental. It's a transcendental position. And by this fixity of accepting the orders of Krishna, coming through the bona fide spiritual master, coming through the scriptures, coming through the sadhus, by doing this and really seriously putting our faith in those instructions and following them very carefully on a regular daily basis, the result is that we do become more and more solidly fixed. The tendency to, you know, be pulled this way and that by the material nature gradually diminishes. And we gradually, the flickering flame starts flickering a little less, and starts flickering a little less, and flickering a little less, and finally becomes absolutely still. Now the yogis, they try to do this through asanas, through breathing exercises, etc. But that's a very difficult system, because there's so many distractions of this material nature. And even if you do get fixed, even on the samadhi level you can fall down, like Vishwamitra Muni. That beautiful Menaka came from the heavenly kingdom and his mind was deterred from his meditation. But in Krishna consciousness, we fall in love with the object of our meditation. It's not mechanically trying to glue our mind to Krishna rigidly. But what we're doing is we're falling in love with Krishna, you see. When I was in Lithuania, there was some little girl, and they wanted me to give her a nickname, a spiritual nickname. The parents came, "Can you give the daughter a spiritual nickname?" So I didn't know anything about the girl, so I didn't know what name to give her. So they said, I said, "What do you like the most about Krishna?" And she said, "He's so beautiful." You see. So I named her Shama Sundari. But you see, this little girl is in love with Krishna. "He's so beautiful." You see, when you're in love with someone, you think, "Oh, that's such a beautiful person." You see, you just appreciate their beauty like anything. That's when you're in love with someone. So this little girl is in love with Krishna. "He's so beautiful." You see. So this, we have to come to this point where we actually fall in love with Krishna. He's so beautiful. He's so wonderful. Everything he does is so special. It's so sweet. Every word, every pastime, everything about him is just incredibly nectarian. These kind of feelings will come as we become more and more purified by chanting, by following the principles, by doing devotional service. These kinds of natural feelings of love and attraction for Krishna will come more and more and more over time until they become completely mature. And then there's no question of taking birth again. We'll actually go to his abode. Krishna will satisfy our desire to love him, you see, by giving us the best possible facility for loving him in Goloka Vrindavan. So anyway, by following this path of sadhana bhakti very carefully on a regular daily basis, and doing it with great intensity, because you know what? We don't know how long we're going to live. We should live every day as if it's going to be our last day on this planet. You know why? Because one day it will be. That's a fact. One day, it will be your last day on this planet. We don't know when that day will come. It could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be next week. It could be in 5 minutes from now. We do not know when we will leave this body. Therefore, we should live every day. Why every day? We should live every second as if our last second. By being intensely focused on Krishna. Whether I'm at the temple, whether I'm working a job, going to school, whatever I'm doing, I should be intensely focused on Krishna. And in this way, be qualified that if death does in fact come today, that I would go to Krishna's transcendental abode. That's why we shouldn't hold grudges. Some devotee maybe treated me roughly, was a little rude to me. I shouldn't hold a grudge. Because I may leave the, when you leave the body, you don't want any grudges against anyone. You want to have a heart which is completely feeling love for all living beings, because they're all part and parcel of Krishna. So that's why this anger, you see, anger is what causes us to hold grudges. We keep some feeling of anger towards someone. Should not let any of this sit in the heart. It's pollution in the heart. Have a heart which is devoid of any grudges, any feeling of anger towards anyone. This is a very important lesson. I'll read the verse once again, my dear king. Just consider what I have said to you, which will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger. For anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instructions. So, are there any questions? Yes.
To help this mission by performing austerities apart from doing the service like washing pots, distributing books, etc.
Well, those are also austerities. Washing pots is an austerity. One should act as a cooperative member within our society. Now, that's a fact. Prabhupada said our love for him will be seen by how much we cooperate after his disappearance. So, if you truly love Srila Prabhupada, then you will want to cooperate with the other devotees. You will find some way, somehow or other, to cooperate with the society that he created. Because there is synergy in cooperation. The sum total energy is greater than the adding together all the little your energy plus my energy, this energy, that energy, it adds up. But the synergetic principle means it becomes much greater than just simply adding up the energy. When it's combined, it becomes multiplied by many, many times. So if you want your austerities to be effective, if you want them to be potent for actually elevating you to the topmost platform of Krishna consciousness, then do them in cooperation with the society that Prabhupada created. We see the people who wanted to do them separately from Prabhupada's society. It didn't work. There was one person who was told that he had a terminal disease, he would die very soon. So he just wanted to do some austerities and go to Mayapur and be alone, have his own little kutir and just do some personal austerities. And Prabhupada took compassion because he had a terminal disease. He was supposed to die very soon. Prabhupada gave him Babaji initiation. So he could just sit alone and do his austerities. But then it turned out that he didn't have a terminal disease, and then he left the movement after them. So what was the value of his little program of individual austerities? You see? It was a desire for self-worship, basically, which is another form of sense enjoyment. Shishi Garnitai Ki Jai, Shishi Radhadamaran Ki Jai. So that idea to do separate austerities is another form of self-worship. That I want to be a great transcendentalist. Bhaktivinoda Siddhanta Saraswati said, He says, what sort of a rascal are you? You want to go separately and do some austerities so people can worship you as a great transcendentalist. That's why people do them. They want to have some reputation, the great transcendentalist. But they're not a great transcendentalist. They're called Bhajana Nandi. The great transcendentalists are those who work together in the society of the spiritual master to save the world from going to further degradation. Those are the great heroes. Those persons are automatically recognized by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. Those people who stick with the society and work together as a member of the society That is a much greater austerity. Because you have your way of doing things, I have my way of doing things, and sometimes we disagree. You see? So to stay together in the society, that is a very big austerity. It's a much bigger austerity than go sit in the Himalayas and doing some deep breathing in the, you know, in the freezing cold. This is a much greater austerity. Questions more?
This is Dhruva Maharaj. He was an eternally liberated soul.
Does it state that here? Soul. He says he was a liberated soul. That's what it states in the purport. We know that Dhruva Maharaj at least showed the pastime of a conditioned soul. Whether that was a pastime or a real thing, that I do not know. But he showed the pastime certainly of being a conditioned soul. It doesn't say he was an eternally liberated soul, he says he was a liberated soul. In the purport. Doesn't say he was eternally liberated. It appears from everything I've read that he was indeed a conditioned soul who became liberated. Questions more? Yes.
Sometimes devotees want to cooperate with the peace of the Prabhupada, but then there are strong differences of opinion what it means to follow to the Prabhupada, and then conflict and even anger can arise.
Yeah. Yes.
On the causes and the solution.
Yes. Prabhupada says that sometimes in Krishna consciousness there are differences of opinion, because I'm thinking we should serve Krishna in this way, you are thinking we should serve Krishna in that way, so we disagree with each other. But Prabhupada says that disagreement is spiritual, because we're both thinking how to please Krishna. So if we can remember this point when we sometimes disagree with one another, that we're both disagreeing on how to serve Krishna. We have to, just like this cup, you see. Is this cup half empty or is it half full? You see, there's two ways you can look at the cup. You can say it's half empty. You can meditate on the negative side. Or it's half full, you can meditate on the positive side. So let's say you and I are disagreeing over how to serve Krishna. I can say, well, you know, you have your opinion, I have mine, your attitude's wrong, you have the wrong idea. You see, we're looking at the empty side of the cup. But what we really should do is have a positive and say, wow, it's so wonderful that you want to serve Krishna. You and I agree that we should serve Krishna. This is a wonderful thing. How many people in Amsterdam agree that we should serve Krishna? How foolish it is if we break a relationship over a disagreement over a way to serve Krishna. How stupid that is. You see? Because we are a very, very small, small number of people and amongst a huge population of over a million who want nothing to do with Krishna. And we both want to please Krishna. So we should be able to tolerate whatever differences of opinion we have with each other over the ways to serve Krishna, because the fact that we agree to serve Krishna, that far outweighs in significance our disagreement over how we should serve Krishna. Our agreement to serve Krishna is a very significant thing, and our differences on how we should serve Krishna, that's actually very insignificant. So if we keep that perspective in our own heart and do not allow ourselves to become angry over differences of opinion of how to serve Krishna, then that will create an atmosphere where others can also feel that same wonderful transcendental mood. And that will create an atmosphere that will make ISKCON what Prabhupada wants it to be, the leading institution, leading educational institution on this planet, that everyone comes to ISKCON for higher education. You see, people think, well, Oxford, you know, or Harvard, this is the highest educational institutions. That's not true. ISKCON is actually the highest, it is the topmost educational institution on this planet, Raja Vidya, you see. Raja Vidyalaya, as they say in Hindi. This is the topmost place of knowledge. ISKCON. So in this way, we should tolerate our disagreements and remain together in a loving and trusting way to serve Prabhupada's mission. Any questions further? Yes.
Yeah, this is not an important question, but one devotee said that this beating the mind with broom and shoes means preaching to the mind. And I'm wondering if this is really necessary.
Let's see, you're saying, what about the mind?
That the beating of the mind by broom and shoes means preaching to the mind.
Preaching to the mind. Yeah, I'm half deaf, so let's see if I can adjust my hearing aid to pick this up. Actually, I already had it on full volume, so what is he? You're saying, what is he saying? Can you, someone hear what he's saying?
To beat the mind with a broomstick.
Oh, yeah.
Does it mean to preach to the mind?
Yes, that's right. That's right. You can preach to your own mind.
It's not enough to just hear and...
No, preaching your mind is good. Now, if you hear very nicely and your mind is peaceful, then that's sufficient. But if you're still having mental problems, and I think we all do from time to time, then it's good to sometimes actually directly preach to our mind, like poet Govindadas does in his song, Bhaja Hrime Mana. He's saying, my dear mind, you engage yourself in the devotional service of the divine son of Nanda Maharaj. If you're having no trouble with your mind, then you're totally fixed in pure bhakti 24 hours and you don't need to worry about it. But if you're like most of us, the mind sometimes really, you know, does some nonsense things, then it's very nice. You can take this prayer of Govindadas, my dear mind, please engage yourself in the devotional service of the divine son of Nanda Maharaj. Bhaja hure mana shri nanda nandana abhaya chada nada vindade. So in this way, we can adjust the mind. Many of our Vaishnava acharyas have shown this example of addressing the mind. You see, because it's not you; it's something separate from you. But the trouble is, we think I am this mind, and that keeps us entangled in material consciousness. We have to realize the mind and me are two. We are not one. We are two different things. The mind is a covering of the self; it is not the self. Questions more? Yes.
Yes, I was talking about this text and raising the point of defending oneself, whether that would be justified or not. I had the understanding that we don't bother, like in any case, defending ourselves. That Krishna will take care of this.
According to Vedic injunction, if someone, Prabhupada one time, I was told that Prabhupada said that if someone is coming to kill me, do you think I'm a fool? I will stand over the door with a brick. The thing is, your body is not you. It's Krishna's property. You see, that body is the property of Krishna. And you have a duty to protect it if someone comes to kill it. Because it's Krishna's property. So defending yourself against an aggressor, we are not artificially non-violent. But it's not that we're into violence either. The Kshatriya, they are called protect from harm. One who protects from harm. They are not aggressive. So we are not aggressively violent. But violence can be, we are non-violent. That is our position. But violence can be used to protect a non-violent person from violence if required. If someone comes to kill you, you can protect yourself. I've seen sometimes how sometimes a violence or the show of violence is very helpful. One time we were in Miami and we had some armed bandits come during milk prasadam. They grabbed one brahmacharini, they put a gun in her head, and they came into the prasadam, sitting there taking milk prasadam, you know. And here's two armed bandits with guns. And the gun at the Mataji's head. And they said, you know, give us... They said, everybody get down on the floor. They ordered everybody on the floor. It's pretty heavy. So I decided to be a little... I don't know, something inspired me to try to be a little bold. So I just started yelling out the name of Sringadev at them. And guess who got the gun pointed at them? Me. The gun came to me and it was pointed at me. instead of the Brahmacharini, I got the gun at my head. And I said, I tried to reason. I said, we're your friends. What do you want? I said, the money. Where's the money? Actually, they didn't know it, but the treasury was right there. By the treasury entered into the Pashadam room. So the temple president, he comes out of the treasury, and he didn't know anything. He just thought we were taking milk Pashadam out there. He didn't realize there was a holdup going on in the other room. Abhi Ramprabhu comes out, he goes, and he decides he didn't like to be in that room. He thought he'd go back into the treasury and shut the door. But the bandit followed him. He turned the gun upside down and hit Abhiram on the head and drew blood from his head. But Abhiram is very intelligent. He is not one to be to lose his cool under stress. Abhiram audibly, because the temple treasurer was sitting there at the desk of the treasury, he had a gun in the drawer. Abhiram knew that gun, a loaded gun, was sitting there. So he told the treasury, he said, this is very intelligent. He said it out loud, very clearly. He said, get the gun and shoot the bastard. That's all that bandit had to hear. He was gone. He didn't even see the gun. All he heard was, get the gun and shoot the bastard. And he turned around and he was running out the door as fast as he could. And the temple treasurer did grab the gun. He did run and he shot and he hit the wall instead of the bandit. But there was a time when there was also an armed attack at New Vrindavan. And we heard that Prabhupada had said from India, he said, if you give me a gun in one hand and a bead bag in the other, and I will protect you. So it's not that we cannot use a weapon if we're being attacked. We are not aggressors. It's not a fun for us, but it may be a necessity sometime. If someone is attacking you violently, you may have to kill them to protect yourself from being killed. And it's better that they die than you die. You're a preacher. You're needed on this planet. If it's a question of a bandit dying or you dying, it's better that they die than you die. You see? So violence can be used if necessary to protect someone from an aggressor. Any other questions?
Can there be violence without anger?
Can you?
If you protect yourself.
Can you do it without anger? If you can do it with a cool head, then that's all right. I mean, Abhiram did show a pretty cool head when he said, get the gun and shoot the, you know what. He was pretty cool. If you can do it with the thing is, anger should never be uncontrolled. Because then you do stupid things. If you can utilize anger in a controlled way, there's two types of anger. In the material world, all they know is anger, which is uncontrolled. But a transcendentalist has the ability to utilize anger as a tool in the service of Krishna. It's called controlled anger. Only really devotees understand what is this controlled anger, but that can be used. One can make a show of anger, like the snake, you know, showing his hoods, but not biting the children. Devotee knows how to make a show of anger. I had an experience of doing that myself one time. I was distributing prasadam on the sidewalk. Simply these sweets we kept, Simply Wonderfuls. I was giving out Simply Wonderfuls by a university campus on the street, University Avenue in Gainesville, Florida. You know, it was a very nice thing. I'm giving a free, not even selling it, just giving it out as a gift to people. I mean, that's a very loving, generous, kind thing that devotees do. Give out prasadam to people on the street. So one hippie, who was a real wisecrack, a smart aleck, thought he would have some fun. And he came by and he just hit the basket and threw all the sweets out in the street. So that's a great offense. Just imagine what kind of reaction he would get for doing that. So I decided to be kind upon him. And I made a very, very strong show of anger to him. Very, very heavy. I don't want to imitate it here in front of you all, but I basically, in a very loud voice, I pointed my finger right in his face, about this far away from his face. I said, you better get out there and pick up those sweets right now. And I yelled it at him, right in his face. You better get out there and pick up all of those sweets right now. Very loudly and very intensely, looking right into his face with great fierce roaring, like a lion. And you know what he did? He ran out into the street and picked up all the sweets. He went, and he ran out and picked up all the sweets. And it was right in the middle of traffic. The light was red for like 20 seconds, you know? And he ran out there. It happened so fast that this all happened between the when the light went red and when it turned green again. It happened very fast. He actually, and I helped him actually, so we got all the sweets in time. But he ran out in the middle of the intersection, started picking up sweets. I used the tool of anger, and it worked. It was effective to flip, to bring him back to sanity, that I have done a very offensive thing. You see? So angry, if I had just been real mild and meek and say, you know, could you please pick up the sweets? It probably wouldn't have done anything. Because I used that angry vibration can actually help people sometimes. It's like wakes you up. You see? So, I think we've gone a bit, probably going over time. I usually go over time. We started late today anyway because of Dhammadharashtakam. So we will stop here and we thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.